sons and daughters. I'm John Miller, and this is Locked on Mizzou, your destination for partisan Missouri Tigers football and basketball talk 5 days a week. And thanks in advance for reviewing and rating and subscribing on Apple Podcasts, because with their algorithms, believe it or not, that kind of stuff really does help grow the audience. So if you take just a second there, thank you so much in advance. And you know what? If you're not an Apple user, I'll settle for a review on Facebook or Google, whatever it might be. So appreciate you guys so much. But you know what? I'm not appreciating the Missouri Athletic Department at the moment. And you know what? If you've listened to this show the last few weeks, you know that essentially I have been making the case for terminating Barry Odom, for not retaining him as the Missouri football coach, with headlines such as Odom out of excuses and is this his finale and these sorts of things. But if you really listen closely, you'll notice that I always stop short of saying fire him. I never actually said that we should get rid of Barry Odom, and that's for a very specific reason. It's because of what I don't know. There's a lot I don't know in this world. Yes, I'm one of the few people who speaks into a microphone who's willing to admit that. And one of the things that I absolutely do not know is how the coaching carousel, particularly a couple weeks ago before any of this got started, I didn't know how any of it was going to shake out. I didn't know where Missouri was going to be in the pecking order. Certainly, we didn't know at the time what jobs were going to come available. And obviously, we're still, there's plenty we don't know. Despite all of the hot boards, which, boy, the hot board this morning looked more like a hot mess to me. But all the stuff we've read from Gabe DeArmond and the various reporters out there, beat reporters, the rumor mongers, if you will. Well, there still is obviously a lot that we don't know. Clearly, we don't know who Mizzou's coach is really going to be, and perhaps it will be somebody who is completely off the board, somebody that nobody's even talking about. But unfortunately, if that's the case, we may end up with another Frank Haith situation, somebody that's so far off the board that nobody will be excited when he's actually hired. That would be one of my concerns. Now, speaking of Gabe DeArmond and things I'm concerned about, well, it was revealed, at least to me this week, that it appeared that when Barry Odom was hired, that he was given some mandates. And we've discussed this a little bit before, but obviously after the 2015 protests, that whole period, if you're a Mizzou fan, we don't totally need to rehash all of that, I hope. But long story short, after that, the academics, the people in the university, the athletic department, well, they basically wanted to erase anything that attached itself to that 2015 period. So after Gary Pinkle resigned with his cancer troubles, essentially it was decided that, well, with the notable exception of Andy Hill, I suppose, and we might get to a little bit more with Andy in a minute, that all of the coaches needed to be gone. We needed to clean house. And Tim Wolf, the university president who resigned, well, that was sort of part of that too. Let's get rid of him as well. I'm sure it was made very clear to him that he was no longer wanted in the university. Well, notably, Pat Ivey was the one who I've seen players really praise recently, like Trey Hobson, for instance, calling him really the secret sauce of the Pinkle era in some ways. That's my words, not his. But along with that, you've got Barry Odom apparently being told, who was hired in part because of his defensive acumen. Well, apparently it was told to him that he needed to hire a defensive coordinator. Well, we know how that ultimately ended up working out between him and DeMonte Cross. Not very well. And now here's the thing. We can sit here and have a discussion about whether Barry Odom should have had a defensive coordinator or not. If you believe that, well, he had too much on his plate and he needed to be more of a delegator, that's fine. That's a perfectly reasonable thing to think. But the problem with that is, if you're going to hire a guy to be your head football coach, You have to let him coach how he wants to coach. Otherwise, you're doing it wrong. Otherwise, you should have never hired him in the first place. And what I'm worried about here now, just reading some of the rumors, some of the innuendo, again, from Gabe DeArmond at Power Mizzou, is that perhaps Missouri still, 4 years removed from these protests, not that this particular moment, this example I'm about to lay out has anything to do with 2015, but again, it's the micromanaging aspect. It's the idea of not letting the coach that you either hired or the guy that you're interested in do his own thing. Well, one thing Gabe said, and I'll quote here. He said, "One thing I've picked up on, I thought Missouri would make a clean break staff-wise, and they still might. It could depend on the coach, but I do know there is hope that a spot can be found on the new staff for Andy Hill and Brick Haley. I don't know that it's a mandate or anything, but it is something someone told me has been broached. Perhaps that's only for certain coaches, I'm not sure. Hill and Haley have still been out on the road recruiting this week for sure. Not sure how many of the other coaches have been." Well, the thing is, if Will Healy, who's at Charlotte right now, he's a 34-year-old guy, an up-and-comer, charismatic guy. You know, again, what do I know about anything? I haven't watched Charlotte play football this year. But for my money, after I've been following this search the last few days, I started to really like what I heard and saw from Will Healy. I got really interested in him. And again, something I've said about this job is I'd like to see Missouri go for an upside candidate. Even if maybe that candidate isn't the long-term guy, this isn't necessarily going to be his last job, we don't need to worry about that. We just need to worry about getting the right coach for now. And the point of bringing all of this up is there's now thought that, well, while Missouri was interested in Healy, they told him that, oh, well, they wanted him to bring in a more experienced offensive and defensive coordinator if he indeed becomes the coach. Well, we didn't do that to Gary Pinkel when we hired him, did he? Gary Pinkel got to bring his entire staff over. And again, he chose, I suppose, I don't believe it was a mandate, but he chose to keep Andy Hill around. Great. And again, it's amazing how long Andy Hill's been around, hasn't it? But regardless, again, if Will Healy decides, you know what would be great? If we kept Andy Hill and Brick Haley around to ease this transition to, or just for whatever reason he thought, because they're valuable coaches, valuable recruiters, whatever reasons he thought, let him make that decision. Or quite honestly, if he wants to get rid of them, let him make that decision as well. But my point is, and again, I don't know if this is true, but I've seen a lot of indications that it might be, if our athletic department is making mandates about who our potential coaches are going to hire as coordinators, it's no wonder that this hot board, quote-unquote, of potential coaches seems to be getting shorter and not longer. It's no wonder if Will Healy was told this, it's no wonder that he would tell Mizzou to go fly a kite. I mean, honestly, if that's true, that's ridiculous. And if it's not, well, I guess Gabe needs to be a better reporter. I don't know what to tell you. But anyway, since I just fired a shot at Gabe DeArmond unnecessarily, why did I just do that? But anyway, I guess I'll treat myself to an ad review. But you should treat yourself, that's the point, to the meal that you deserve and have your favorite restaurants come to you with DoorDash. Because right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code Locked On. That's one word, Locked On. And as always, if you're listening on the go, you can find this and all other offers from Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcast.com/offers. I've seen a lot of talk about, well, this hire would make a splash with the fans, and this hire would not make a splash with the fans. Well, I think, again, when you look at somebody, let's take Will Healy, since we've been talking at him. You know, even though he's a young, charismatic guy, getting the former head coach of Charlotte is probably not going to be the splash with the fan base that one might imagine. Now, I think much more important again, to use a somewhat overused phrase, is the brand. Okay, Will Healy is a brand. You know what he is if you're a recruit. You know what kind of passion and excitement he brings. There's something to that. But as far as the fans go, even if you hired a guy, the biggest name you could think of that maybe realistically would come here, say a Lane Kiffin, who we discussed a little bit previously. If Lane came, yeah, that would be a splash. But I'm telling you, that splash lasts about the length of one offseason. Because as soon as that is over, we're looking for results. Yeah, you might get some good puff pieces, a few more season tickets, a little bit more excitement, a little bit more talking on the margins here or there. That's all well and good, but again, that is really ephemeral and something that is only going to last at most one offseason. Eventually, and actually I should say immediately, the results are what's going to come into play for fans. That's how we are. I've also seen some rumors that former Florida coach Jim McElwain might be the leader in the clubhouse at Missouri, and then I've also seen other indications that maybe he's not all that interested in the job either. Quite honestly, I'm just not sure that McElwain has the kind of upside that I would desire in a coach, and certainly he's not the kind of guy that's going to raise Mizzou's recruiting rankings immediately or anything. But to be fair, I'm not sure who that guy is. I'm not sure there is a guy who immediately raises Mizzou's recruiting rankings. But just the fact that we're questioning if Jim McElwain would even want this job is kind of a slap in the face, really. And it shows the, unfortunately, the situation that Missouri has created for itself, these self-inflicted wounds, in my opinion. Now, while I've never been a university president or in any sort of university administration or in the athletic department or anything like that, I can tell you this. Here's what I am. I'm a white guy who went to college, and pretty much everybody in these decision-making opinions, in these decision-making positions, I should say, are white guys who went to college. And one thing I know about white guys who went to college, who stick around and stay in academia, well, what they live for is seeming like the smartest guys in the room. That's basically their big thing. They fancy themselves intellectuals. And if you're a white guy at a university in academia, there's probably nothing that you love more than calling other white people racist and pointing out things that are problematic or not woke, as it were, especially in this current climate that we're in, right? And on the other side of the things, there's nothing that these white intellectuals fear more than being called racist themselves. And what better example of that can we get than former Missouri President Tim Wolf? See, Jonathan Butler, remember that guy? Yes, the former concerned student 1950 protester. He basically ran into Tim Wolf's car himself and faked being hit by a car, for one thing. So, again, Tim Wolf, knowing this, Tim Wolf has to know that, okay, this is complete nonsense. I'm not like a white supremacist or something. I've got a kid who's pretending that he's getting run over by a car that's reversing at 1 mile per hour in a parade. This is all nonsense, and yet he's too much of a chicken, quite honestly, to stand up for himself. Well, do you think he's alone? My point is, Mac Rhodes, when he was here, he hired Barry Odom and then found the quickest train he could get out of town to Waco, Texas, when he could get it. Because he, again, he's terrified. I guarantee you he is terrified of being thought of as the athletic director at racist old Missouri. Oh, those darn racists at Mizzou. It's a good thing this country has no other history of racism whatsoever. Yes, it's all on Mizzou. Let's point our fingers at them. You know, I'm sorry, it's amazing to me that this stuff still sticks. It's 4 years later. And just as an example, heck, look at a piece from Newsweek a year ago. Let me just read the first couple sentences of this piece for you. Again, this is Newsweek from 2018. It says, before Russian bots meddled in the 2016 presidential election, they targeted the University of Missouri to further aggravate heightened racial tensions, a report found. Well, there's a lot to unpack there, but let's just move past that to the second sentence. Frustration with pervasive racism on Mizzou's campus came to a head in fall 2015 with student protests, a hunger strike, a football team strike, boycotts, and other activism, which culminated in the resignation of Tim Wolfe, yada, yada, yada. Now, the point here is, this is a Newsweek piece. This is ostensibly an objective article. This is something that people throughout the country, when they read it, when it's in print, it's frickin' Newsweek, they're just simply going to believe it. And despite the fact that all of this that I've just talked to you about, the fact that I've said, well, you know, the Jonathan Butler thing, that was actually nonsense. And the idea of, oh, pervasive racism, well, I would like to question, where has that pervasive racism been the last 4 years? Where are the poop swastikas? Where are the pickup trucks with Confederate flags flying out the back of them that are, you know, driving through campus menacingly and screaming the N-word out the windows? My point is, if all of this was as pervasive as Newsweek says that it is, we would still see some evidence of it, wouldn't we, in these subsequent 4 years? But no, the national media stayed at Missouri for a couple weeks, and then when they had basically burned down our athletic department, they decided, well, time to move on to the next thing. And basically no follow-ups ever happened until, oh, there's some stuff about Russian bots. Well, we can use this. So now they'll call it fake. Essentially, they're calling it fake. What happened to Mizzou, they're saying it's fake in the Newsweek here by saying that Russian bots amplified it. But then out of the other side of their mouth, they say, well, you know, frustration with pervasive racism without an ounce of real evidence for it. Really? This was all stuff that was completely made up, and yet Missouri continues to suffer for it. And I'm just getting beyond frustrated by it, to be quite honest. Now, if you're going to sit here and tell, oh, so you're saying racism doesn't exist and blah, blah, blah. No, that's not what I'm saying. I understand that racism exists. And I understand that people really suck sometimes. I completely get that. But that doesn't mean that you get to Jesse Smollett, the University of Missouri, and make up something that frankly didn't happen. And honestly, my biggest thing is yes, it's something that happened. Well, eventually this university, this athletic department is going to learn, is going to have to grow a pair and not be complete cowards and not just be like, oh, we're going to crawl into a corner and just say the nice PC language and hope everybody likes us. Well, so far that's not really working out for Missouri. We need to actually defend ourselves and say, no, actually, this stuff didn't happen. It's wrong. You're all lying. Eventually, we're going to have to say that. We can't just keep going, we're so sorry. Gee, what can we do? We'll throw ourselves on the Politburo. I'm sick of it. I really am. So, you know what? That was a long, long rant there that I didn't mean to get off into, but that's something that's been on my mind for a while. And quite honestly, I'm glad it came off. And you know what? I'm not done ranting, because coming up, I got to talk about Tristan Colon Castillo a little bit, his remarks about the Missouri fans, and also a little something about mental health as well, coming right up. You know what? If we're going to talk about mental health, you might be thinking, oh, this crazy guy needs to look into his own mental health after that rant. Well, fair enough. I can't argue with that, because I'll be honest, until I had gotten into this podcast, this five-day-a-week podcast in the last couple months, I'd been doing a good job in the last few years of just watching Missouri games and letting them go, no matter what the result was, after maybe even an hour or two. I really could get over things pretty quickly. But now, oh no, I am forced to dive deeply into all the nooks and crannies of Missouri Tiger sports. And you know what? Based on timing alone, it's been pretty rough for your boy. My goodness. How much more am I expected to put up with, really? And speaking of, man, losing to Chuck South on top of all this other stuff, I don't know. Could we maybe surprise me and give me something to be happy about? Maybe the football coach will be something beyond my wildest imaginations, and I'll just be thrilled beyond belief. And while I think you should maybe log off of Twitter and Power Mizzou and take a power walk instead for your own mental health, well, I got to stay on top of it, don't I, in order to give you this magical, magical podcast. But you know what? I'd give some similar advice to Mr. Tristan Colon Castillo for slightly different reasons, because it sure seems like he is not a happy camper right now. And I understand that he's frustrated with the Mizzou season and all that good stuff. Heck, we as fans are certainly frustrated too, but instead of joining us crying in our beer together, it sure seems like Tristan has a habit of blaming us for what happened this season. Well, first of all, Colon Castillo spoke out after, it was either the Vanderbilt or Kentucky game, but he was basically saying, hey, quite honestly, there are some guys in the locker room who aren't getting done what they need to get done off the field. And I'm paraphrasing there a little bit, but essentially he was calling out some of his teammates generally, and not specifically by name, but calling out some guys and saying, hey, we got to get our work done, basically. We got to get our stuff together, long story short. So there was that. And then on October 22nd, you had Tristan saying, I've been on social media and everyone calling for Coach Odom's head. I think it's bull, well, he said a different word, but I'm going to say bull hockey. Fans trying to come after Coach Odom, you can come talk to me. Well, that sounded more than a little bit threatening, didn't it? Well, Tristan, I'm sure you can beat me up, so I will not come and talk to you. I'll talk to you through here, though, but please don't come beat me up. But, you know, that would have been one thing. I could have let him off the hook for a one-time frustrated moment of kind of lashing out the fans a little bit. But then after the season, Tristan had this to say. He said, we had some ups and downs, had some ups and definitely some downs. He says, this is a team that came together. Oh, is it? Interesting. I wasn't necessarily aware of that. But Colon then continues. He says, the fans weren't supporting us. Oh, well, again, my bad. NCAA drops this bomb on us that we're not going to be playing a bowl game. Every week, everybody's talking about wanting the coaches to get fired. They're talking about players needing to get benched. Through all that, we stayed together, and we worked, and we grinded with each other every single day and put our hearts into it and played for each other, end quote. So I guess maybe what Colon learned is that, hey, I better not take it out on my teammates. I guess I'll take it out in the fans instead. Well, easier than taking it out on a mirror, I suppose, right, buddy? All right, that might have seemed a little harsh, but you know what? Honestly, when after the season that the longtime diehards like myself and my family and so many of you who are listening to this have been through, it's just kind of tough to hear. It's not as though these games are free. Oftentimes we're paying thousands of dollars for our seats, for a seat of four or something like that, for our family to go to these games, the parking, the tailgating, the time that we spend, everything about that. And by the way, the Ole Miss game was a technical sellout. It sure looked pretty darn full in there to me. So I don't know. Everything fell off. The wheels fell off the wagon at that point. And I don't know. I just think that was a tough taste. And that's a tough taste to put in your fans' mouth to two different times to basically say, they weren't there for us. Well, Tristan, I was literally there for you and the rest of the guys at every single game. So, and I'm also passionate enough that I do a podcast about this program and the men's basketball program 5 days a week. So if you think that I wasn't there with you, well, I don't know what to tell you, bud, but good luck in the NFL. That's all I can say. I was a little surprised that you declared, but I certainly am not going to hold a grudge, and I'll wish you all the best, my friend. Hope to see you on down the road. And you know what? I hope to see all of you down that dusty trail next time on this show that I like to call Locked On Mizzou.